Mark McGuire and his orchestrated effort to repair his, I don't know, legacy, I guess, reputation, trash it and rebuild it again. Very interesting turn of events. McGuire admits to using steroids. It's been on a real PR offensive over the last day. We've got pistol packing NBA players while the Patriots dynasty runs aground. Who do we turn to? We welcome back to the Brian Kenny Show, the king of the internet, the sports guy, Bill Simmons. How are you, Bill?
Very excited to be here. It's a lively Tuesday.
How about that? I mean, Bill and I, by the way, have been talking about this. We did this a few months ago, and Bill called me between segments to rip my Hall of Fame segment.
I hated it.
You had to say, what are you putting everybody in? And
You had Dale Murphy and Rance Molnick's in. I can't believe Rance Molnick's made it.
Rance Molnick, Red Shandings, Porter, you know, on the trains he got in.
Unbelievable.
So Bill Simmons with us the full hour here on the Brian Kenny Show for the next hour, and we'll talk all these different topics. Bill, your big picture take on the day that unfolded with Mark McGuire yesterday, what do you come away with?
That he shouldn't have kept talking. I think he was fine with the statement. I would have ended it there. The Costas thing was just, I couldn't look away. It was a train wreck. And, you know, he contradicted himself so many times, and his argument was just so stupid that, you know, he did these steroids off and on. He couldn't stop doing them, but they didn't help him. What does that even mean?
Right. I mean,
they didn't help you.
He seemed to, Bill, draw the line, and I think this was a coached-up thing. I think this is where
they
coached him up and said, all right, you will admit to all of this, but you cannot admit to any of these home runs coming from that because that will hurt your legacy, that'll hurt Hall of Fame, that'll hurt the Maris record, all of that. I mean, do you think that's why they drew the line there?
Well, the worst thing that really is happening to him now is when he gives these interviews, he's just so much skinnier. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is like a before-after picture. And then he's telling us that it didn't really matter and he didn't want to go over a certain weight. But then you see the highlights and it literally looks like his body's going to explode.
Right, right.
He looks like a tire that's been inflated, you know, 5 pounds too heavy and you're just kind of, you're wincing and you waited for the tire to explode in your face. And that's what his arms looked like. I just don't think, you know, you look at his career stats and you and I are in the minority of people who love to do this, but we like looking at career stats mm-hmm. and how the years ebb and flow. This is a guy who looked like he was on his way out of baseball in the mid-90s and then suddenly is hitting 50 to 70 homers a year.
Yeah.
For him to say that steroids, you know, weren't responsible for that, I can't believe somebody could go on TV and make that argument.
It's ludicrous. No, it's absolutely ludicrous. Let me take his point for a second here. We're talking to Bill Simmons, sports guy on the Brian Kenny Show, ESPN Radio. Let's say he wants to come back into baseball. He doesn't want to be a hermit anymore, Bill. What should he have done? I mean, he wanted to come out. What do you think he should have done?
Well, that's what I thought embarrassed him, is that, you know, 5 years goes by. He gets a job. He's the hitting coach of the Cardinals. Oh, I have to say something.
Mm-hmm.
So it just seemed to me this was contrived from the get-go. And I know he looked like he was torn up, but I know he looked like he was upset and genuinely affected by this. But if he's been allegedly carrying around this burden for however many years, first of all, you just told us you didn't cheat. You know, you just did this for recovery. It had no effect on your swing and the way you studied pictures. So why was this a burden to you?
Right.
And then secondly, you know, I just think it's self-serving to say, yeah, let's get this out of the way now because I got a job. You know, you cheated. You disgraced the game. You say you regretted being in the steroids era. I forget who said this. I think it was Tim Brown and Yahoo, but you were the steroids era.
No, that was me. I said that.
Oh, you said that? I forget who. Somebody said it.
I said that, yes. He was the vanguard of the steroids era. He was it, yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's like I can't even think of a comparison. It would be like I don't know, the Rolling Stones saying they resented being part of the 70s rock era.
Yeah, the British invasion. The Beatles say, well, I wish I wasn't part of the, I wish
yeah.
I wasn't in the British invasion. No, you weren't.
The first guy you think of when you think of the steroids era, you think of him
and
Sammy Sosa with this steroid-infused chest bump or whatever the hell they did. Elbow bump? Arm bump?
They did the chest bump. Yeah, I think they did the exploding forearm thing, too. Right.
The Sprite commercial.
I mean, it really, I believe, too, talking to Bill Simmons. Bill, I think it also made everybody think, okay, including Barry Bonds, and this was like, remember there was the report that Ken Griffey Jr. was overheard saying that Bonds saw that happen and said, okay, is this what you people want? I think stars had to think that, and anybody who was trying to get into the bigs, I mean, these guys were providing the example, weren't they?
Totally. And, you know, Jeff Perlman's book about Barry Bonds did a great job of elaborating on that. Bonds had, in 98, I think either it was one of his top three all-around years that were the best ones. One of his best all-around years. And he got no attention at all. He got overshadowed by Maguire Sosa. And he was a guy that had been the best all-around player in baseball for 12, 13 years and just had the reputation of being a jerk, and that was it. Nobody even talked about him. And he just snapped. And he was like, all right, well, this is how this is the only way I'm going to become notorious. And that's what he did. But, you know, I think at the very end, Maguire was talking about, I think Costa said something like, when you remember hugging the Maris family and all that stuff, now is it tainted for you? And Maguire was like, no, not at all. Those were my moments. You know, those are special to me. It's like, dude, those are tainted. I'm sorry. Everything that you did when you cheated was tainted. And look, I'm fine. I've written about this. I'm fine with him going in the Hall of Fame. I think it's a sham if he's not in the Hall of Fame, if Bonds isn't in there. All these guys should be in that were Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. Just put on their plaque that they played in an era where people cheated and they were one of the people that cheated.
All right. Well,
that's it.
Bill Simmons of ESPN.com, the sports guy, with us for a full hour here on the program. It's great to have him back, and there's so much to talk about. You can email the show, bk@espnradio.com, or you can text us at 7ESPN. All right, Bill, your thoughts on Bud Selig. Remember when he was first hired as the hitting coach for the Cardinals and that was announced? Selig had a statement out that afternoon, and Selig came out with a statement, you know, again, fully behind Mark Maguire once he admitted it to the, using steroids, to the Associated Press yesterday afternoon. What do you make of the commissioner of baseball being so understanding of Mark Maguire?
It's illogical. I don't understand it. I guess it's so embarrassing for everybody who oversaw baseball in any capacity in the late 90s and through about 2004, 2005. You know, the blood's on their hands. And for them to, I guess, come out and condemn any of these guys, you can't really do that, can you? Because you were there. You're Bud Selig. You were in charge when this happened. And, you know, I just want one of these guys to come clean. One of these guys not to come up with convoluted excuses or, you know, pretend they didn't do it and just come out and say, everybody else was doing it. I was looking for an edge. I felt I was slipping a little bit. I want to stay in the league.
Right.
I had a girlfriend. I had a mistress. I had my ex-wife. I had 5 cars. I'm taking care of my parents and 15 cousins. And you know what? I just panicked. And everybody else was doing it. And it was easy to do. And I put on 15 pounds. And I started hitting the hell out of the ball. And I feel bad about it now. I think people would accept that.
Yeah, I think almost like, I remember reading about the Tour de France. This was in ESPN, the magazine, where teams would get together and have these meetings. This is on the record, Bill, where they would say, okay, guys, we've stayed strong, yet we're being bypassed. Are we getting with the program or not? I mean, that's the unfortunate part where Bonds, maybe not Maguire, but most players were thinking, are we getting with the program or not? And that, I think, is still the dilemma where I worry about the kid who's on these American Legion team, who's like the best kid ever to play at his high school. He's the stud of the town. He gets to the minors, Class A, wherever that may be, and he has to think, am I getting with the program? Am I getting bypassed by these guys who are juicing? What do you think that player should be thinking now?
He should be mad. And I actually think, you know, we always associate hitters with this stuff. And with pitchers, you know, you could argue that I guess the line between being a successful pitcher and not being as successful is a little, the difference is a little smaller. The difference between throwing 96 and 92, something like that. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, you and I off the air could rattle off all the closers we knew were doing something.
Who are hyper aggressive, breathing fire, going crazy, except like at least Al Hrabowski looked like a big guy at the time, and now he's skinny, you know, they're not skinny these days.
And don't forget the same guys whose elbow eventually would explode in about 9 spots.
Yeah.
Or their arm ligament or whatever, because, you know, the one thing we do know about this stuff is, you know, you can put on too much stress on your ligaments or your tendons, and that's when it leads to the trouble. But just for me, I look back at this whole era, and it seems like there's now a chasm between the diehard baseball fans like us. Certain guys are like, you know what, it was the era, screw it, I'm not going to get bent out of shape. And then there's other people that are like, I don't know what to make of these numbers anymore. Like, I heard you last week, you were talking about Edgar Martinez's numbers with Joe Sheehan and Rob Neyer.
Right.
I haven't heard Edgar mentioning steroid stuff. I don't know if he did it or not. I just know he played in the air, which makes him a suspect. But you were reading those numbers, and I'm thinking, the whole time I'm thinking, was he a steroid guy? Was he a steroid
really,
guy?
Really?
Was he, had I heard one story about him?
There's no way of getting around it, right? I mean,
no,
I brought up like the home run list yesterday, talking to Bill Simmons on the Brian Kenny Show, ESPN Radio, and I brought up, all right, Jim Tomey, Ken Griffey Jr., who are on the list, and I said, who we think are clean. And people are texting in, you think he's clean? Are you out of your mind? And I'm like, I don't know. And so what do you do unless these guys sign affidavits? What do you do, Bill?
Well, in Bagwell and Piazza, you go down the line. Anybody who there's a certain look that the guys had from that era. Let's be honest. I hate to do the profiling thing, but the look of like just a little bit more. I would compare it to Stallone in Rocky One.
almost a little bit doughy,
a little bit seemed watery. Like if you put a needle in them, like just water would leak out. Like they're. And then there was also, obviously the Rocky III, Rocky IV Stallone look where you're just ripped and you're
jacked
up.
Yeah,
what Barry Bonds was. It's funny with the MLB Network, because we're in the offseason, they're showing some of these games. And I was watching the 2002 World Series.
Yeah.
And it's like a CSI episode. Each guy that comes to the plate, you're like, ooh, look at this guy. There's no question.
Right. And you know what was just up? Tim Tuffle and the 86 Mets. And I thought, Tuffle looks like a PA here at ESPN. I mean, these guys are skinny. It's incredible. All right, answer this then. If you're advising the leagues, this stuff is not going away. We're going to get better and better hormones and everything else, Bill. So what's a good enlightened policy to have in a professional sports league? It can be in the NBA, baseball, or football. What's a good policy to have looking to the future and facing the reality?
Do we have the right tests yet? Would be my first question. It doesn't seem like we do. It doesn't seem like we have tests that can totally detect HGH, or you'd have to test them constantly to figure it out. Doesn't it disappear pretty quickly from your system?
Unless you know precisely what chemicals you're testing for, you can't find. Remember, that was the breakthrough in Balco where one guy, I think it was it Patrick Arnold his name? Somebody gave up the vial, right? And that way you know what you're testing for. Or you can just test the testosterone to epitestosterone and hope, like Manny Ramirez, you have something so out of whack it makes no sense.
Or even it happened with Rashard Lewis.
Right.
With the Orlando Magic. I don't know what test they use for that, but I don't think I think the science is always going to be able to stay ahead of the testing. That's certainly been the case with the Olympics for the most part, unless these guys just go off the deep end with whatever they're doing. I guess it's just the era. You're always a suspect. I would compare it to, if you're in a relationship and the person you're with cheats on you, and it's been cheating on you for 8 years, and then you get back together, but you don't trust that person anymore.
Right.
That's how I feel with that. I feel that way about every professional athlete now.
It's a shame. Coming up, Bill Simmons is with us again for the full hour. We'll talk NFL playoffs and his beloved Patriots. Oh, Bill, your beloved Patriots.
Wow. We got to talk Pacquiao, too.
We'll talk Pacquiao. By the way, I think I have an apology to make to Floyd Mayweather. Are you ready for that?
I want to be there for this.
All right, good. I will. I think I'm ready to make it now. I've come to a conclusion. I have thought it through. I'm ready to apologize to Floyd. We'll talk.
That's funny because I'm going to have to apologize for Floyd when we talk about it. I'm going to have to apologize to him for what I'm going to say to Floyd Mayweather.
So you have something that's going to incite him and I'm going to make nice with him? All right, good.
You make nice with him and I will incite him because I have some very strong opinions on
really?
This.
Really? All right,
yes.
Tell you what, we'll do that before we get to football since you're jacked up about that. You know I'm always willing to talk Floyd. What is it? My favorite thing on Floyd?
Once again, we're talking to Brian Kenny, a man of many traits, a master of nothing.
A master of nothing.
Oh.
But you like that, huh? But later he would say this, Bill.
I think you're a great guy.
See? All right, see, it's the many faces of Floyd Mayweather. But I'm ready to apologize to Floyd Mayweather. Breaking news, major breaking news just coming across, seconds ago. This is according to Bruce Feldman and Joe Shad, our college football reporters. Pete Carroll, of course, leaving USC, going to the Seattle Seahawks. He will be replaced by... wait for it. Lane Kiffin. Bill Simmons. Lane Kiffin. 1 year at Tennessee. Now he's going back to USC. Your thoughts?
I
know. How about that?
I'm convinced this Lane Kiffin thing, it all comes down to the fact that he has a cool name. If his name was like Jim Smith, I don't think he has a job. Lane Kiffin sounds like the guy you want. Oh, we got our program's in good shape. We got Lane Kiffin.
Lane Kiffin, yes.
Yeah, of course, like he brings, a movie name.
He brings his father, Monty Kiffin. That's a good name. That's a leading man name, Monty Kiffin, yeah. Who's a defensive coordinator, who's going to be going with him back to USC. That's monstrous. I mean, what a couple of years he's had, Bill. Let's touch on this just for a moment. Again, breaking news, Lane Kiffin will be named to replace Pete Carroll as head coach, according to sources, and that's according to Bruce Feldman and Joe Shad. I mean, he goes from that bizarro Al Davis episode, right, insubordination, yes, with the Raiders, to Rocky Top, where he accuses everybody of cheating in the conference in the SEC, and now he's going back to USC, where he was an assistant coach for a number of years. I mean, it's crazy.
And how is he going to get out of Tennessee? I mean, that's not a place you want to screw over. You have to leave there at like 2 in the morning.
You know, it's the one Bill, you know what I always say? It's like being a football coach in college. It's the one place where labor abuses management. You know, it's seemingly. The one place.
Well, there's two reasons I don't follow. Well, actually, there's three reasons I don't follow college football. One is that I went to a school that wasn't a strong Division I program, Holy Cross. Two is that coaches can just leave and just kill your program.
Yeah.
Like it's the only sport where the coaches have more power than anybody, which frightens me. And then the third one, you know, the BCS obviously is ridiculous, but the coach thing, Pete Carroll has recruited these guys. What if you're a sophomore at USC now and you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to play for Pete Carroll. This guy's like the Bear Bryant of my generation. He's there a year and he leaves. Oh great. Now I have to stay. I can't transfer.
Right.
I'm playing for Lane Kiffin. Maybe I don't like Lane Kiffin. Yeah, it's not fair. And they claim that these guys sign with the schools because, oh no, they're not signing with the coach. They're signing with the university.
Please.
Is there anybody out there that believes that?
Right.
The people in Indiana were going there for the school and not Bobby Knight.
And people will say it's big. Hey, it's business to business. Well, but they don't get paid. You see, they're not in on the business. They got an education. Yeah, maybe if they don't have to devote all of their time to football, which, as we know, you have to devote a lot of time to being a big time D1 football player.
Well, I've been going crazy, you know, because I live in Los Angeles, and obviously the Pete Carroll thing's a huge thing out here, and I know some USC fans who are trying to defend Carroll somehow. This guy snuck out. He was like OJ leaving Bundy Drive. Like, he knew the police was coming, and he's running. I got to catch a plane. I'll see you guys later.
Do you think it's that bad?
I do. I think the school's going to have sanctions, and I think he sniffed the trouble coming around the corner, and he got out of there, and he took a huge job with the Seahawks. And, you know, meanwhile, USC, the whole program's probably going to go in the tank for 2-3 years while they sort this whole thing out. He didn't want to be there for it.
Yeah, but
sure,
right,
I'll take this big check in Seattle.
All right, Pete. But, you know, Pete Carroll, Bill, 97-19 for 9 years. What more do you want? I mean, come on. That was not a big-time program. That was not John Robinson's USC when he took it over. Or maybe it was, but the second go-around. I mean, that was not a powerhouse in college football anymore. He went 97-19. 9 years. This is not Larry Brown dropping in for a year at a program, you know?
True. I'm going to tell you a little story, Brian Kenny.
Go ahead.
He coached my beloved New England Patriots once upon a time.
Yeah?
He was terrible. He took a team that made the Super Bowl, and within 3 years, we stunk. Mm-hmm. And we fired him, and everybody felt bad when we fired him because we all agreed he was an awesome guy who was totally ill-equipped to handle professional football players, and his whole rah-rah BS, all the stuff he did, was just moronic for professional athletes. And when he signed with USC, everyone in New England was like, you know what? That's going to work. That's perfect for him. His all his stuff, all his little motivational tricks and his good guy stuff, mm-hmm. It works. It will work in college. Now he's going back to the pros. He's going to fail again. I'm telling you right now, save this video clip. What day? What's the day? January 12th, 2010?
Yeah.
Save this video clip. He will fail just like he failed in New England.
You don't think in those 9 years – look, I have a tendency to agree with you, actually, because I think it's a completely different job. But you don't think in those 9 years and in a weaker division – again, he's not in the AFC East with the Jets or the Patriots. This is now in the NFC West. Do you think he has a better chance up there, given it is nine years later?
No. I think it'll be worse, and here's why. Have you seen the record? I mean, the list of the college guys who come to the pros and they fail, and they fail partly because they don't know any of the guys they're going against. You know, I think the reason that assistants turn into head coaches and succeed is because they've been in the league and they're like, oh, we're playing Jacksonville this week. They like to do this. Watch out for this guy. You can't be out of the NFL for 9 years and come back into it and pretend you're going to do as good of a job as somebody like, I don't want to use Belichick because after the year he had, mm-hmm. but let's use Rex Ryan.
Right.
Rex Ryan's been in the NFL for 20 years. He knows everybody. He knows every sort of scheme and what everybody does. I think it's a huge disadvantage. And then on top of that, his jack. I remember the big thing in New England was, we're jacked up. We're all kinds of jacked up. Like he said stuff like that. Everyone in Boston used to make fun of him. Actually, in my old column, I called him Coach Fredo.
he was the weak Corleone, right?
He was, because we had Michael was Bill Parcells, and he left, and we got stuck with Fredo. Now he's the Seahawks coach.
I know Fredo. I just want to throw in Fredo went 97-19 at
USC. College. Spurrier won 10 games a year, working 4 hours a day.
Yeah, Spurrier, Nick Saban. We're talking the college football heavyweights. Went to the NFL, got smacked back.
Now
all
of them do.
Yeah,
all of them.
Breaking news. Let me just throw this back in there. ESPN's Joe Shad, Bruce Feldman reporting that Lane Kiffin will be the next head coach at USC. Kiffin was an assistant at USC. He then moved up, I mean, early 30s. I think he was, what, 33? Yeah. Head coach of the Raiders?
No, he's younger. No? He's 17 years old.
17? Doogie Howser. He was finishing up in high school, and he was the head coach for Al Davis. Al Davis said, how old is that kid? What? And then fired him. Then he goes to Tennessee, stirs up all sorts of SEC trouble. I kind of like that, actually. And now he's going back. Let me get on that. We're talking to Bill Simmons. We have another minute here while we talk about this. Again, we had to adjust to the breaking news. We'll talk Mayweather, Pacquiao, and Patriots in a minute. But what did you think? I kind of liked Kiffin going in and not like having so much respect for, Urban Meyer. Oh, you can't say that stuff. I kind of liked it. I think a lot of people, mainstream fans, did like it. Do you think he's a troublemaking guy, or do you kind of like that sort of thing?
I like him. He reminds me of myself. He's not afraid to stand up to people. He stood up to Al Davis, and Al Davis is dead. So if you stand up to a dead guy, the sky's the limit. But, no, I like him. You know what's getting underrated, though, this whole USC story is, and you only know this, you would never know this if you didn't live in California, but the USC-UCLA rivalry is actually a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
I would compare it to Red Sox-Yankees, but if everybody was really laid back about it but just secretly hated the other team.
Right.
The UCLA fans are so delighted by everything that's happening with USC basketball and football that this would be the equivalent of if the Yankees were found to have cheated, you know, in two different areas, and the Red Sox fans were just high-fiving each other nonstop. That's what the UCLA fans are like.
It's the Brian Kenny Show here on ESPN Radio. You can email us, bk@espnradio.com. You can text us, 7ESPN. Again, Joe Shad is going to come on the show, actually, later in the next hour and talk about the latest about that real bombshell. I heard Lane Kiffin mentioned here and there, but I thought, there's no way he gets out of Tennessee right away. But, yeah, no loyalty anywhere. I mean, contracts don't mean anything in that business. We're in the wrong business, Bill. Contracts mean nothing.
Hey, who gets credit for the scoop? That's all I care about. That's a credit scoreboard.
It seems to be a dual Bruce Feldman, Joe Shad.
Oh, it's a half credit.
Yeah, it's a half credit. It's like half credit. A sack.
Who's keeping track of this? I want to know who's keeping track of the credits.
Vince Doria, somewhere in a fortified bunker in the newsroom at ESPN.
Next hour, will you congratulate Joe Shad for his half credit?
For a half a sack. Absolutely. Yes. Bill, you keep doing this, it'll just be the Bill Simmons Show. I've been down that road before.
Oh, I'm going to lay off that one.
Good to have you here, Bill. You having a good time? This is fun.
I love it. I mean, first of all, I'm in my own house. I'm just wearing underwear, and that's it. It's fantastic. I'm very relaxed.
It works.
I've had three glasses of wine.
Oh, sweet. Look at that.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, of course not.
I'm not here to talk about the past.
Yeah, exactly. That's a better way of looking at it. Bill Simmons with us for this hour here on The Brian Kenny Show. Who knew we'd have another such issue to come up where we would need John Maroon, who is the president of Maroon PR, who has worked with many of the top athletes and top sports figures and sports teams out there today, including Cal Ripken, Carmelo Anthony. John was great in going over how Tiger Woods was trying to handle his damage control. We bring him back in here to talk a little Mark McGwire. How are you, John?
Hey, Brian. Hey, Bill. How are you guys doing tonight?
Great,
what's
man.
Happening?
Good to have you back on. All right. From yesterday, where, John, let me just lay this out for people. There was a statement to AP in the afternoon. Next thing you know, there's Tony La Russa is on Baseball Tonight on ESPN. Then there are statements from the Cardinals, from Bud Selig, very quickly. Then, again, voila, he's got an interview with Bob Costas on MLB Network that night. What did you think of the way the whole coming out party was handled by McGwire?
Well, I mean, there's two parts to it. One is, I think, the way it was laid out and the specific people who he spoke to and how it was run was clearly that there was some serious planning in place, and that's a good thing. I mean, to just poo-poo it and not plan and not think it through would have been foolish. So there's definitely a plan in place. What was said after in the statement and then in the interview with Bob That was where I was a little bit more skeptical. But, you know, putting a plan in place and talking to a friendly, you and I talked about this a while back, Bri, about, you know, if Tiger came out choosing someone that he had a comfort level with, someone that he was familiar with, like Mark is with Bob, that makes some sense.
Right. All right, so now what did you think of what he actually said?
Well, I wasn't a big fan of it. I thought that there were some problems with it. One mainly is that he really seemed to want to use the injuries as a reason why he took performance enhancing drugs, and he really wanted to fall back on that. It was almost like he wanted the best of both worlds. He wanted to be forgiven, but he still wanted to hold on to that Hall of Fame hope and hold on to the legitimacy of his numbers hope. My advice to him would have been a little different. Would have been, if we're going to do this, do it. Go all in. I mean, clearly do it 4 or 5 years earlier than this, but if you're going to do it now, do it all in, go all in, and fall on the sword and take the bullet. I think trying to play it this way, he's been met with some skepticism, and I think for good reason, to try to say that the performance-enhancing drugs didn't play a factor in his numbers. I don't know if anybody out there truly believes that.
Hey, John, you just said basically what I told Brian about 15 minutes ago. I think I need to go into PR. I had that whole thing.
You're always out the hanging out in the underwear in the house with the wine, so that's half the battle.
Hey, I have a question. So these people that they're ashamed and they're coming clean or whatever, it's always in these interviews where the camera's really close and you can kind of see like the whiteheads in their forehead and how tense they are and the tears in their eyes, and it's just tense and it's too intimate and it makes me uncomfortable. Why do we do it this way?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not in the TV universe, but I'll tell you, the one thing I would say is that I think this was truly an emotional thing for the guy. I think he was truly feeling it. He was it was hard for him. It was difficult. I think he got a lot off of his chest in a way. I just think, you know, if you're going to do this and you're going to endure all this and you're going to really come out and try to get it out of the way before you start your new career and your new job, might have served them better just to come full bore, because, look, this is the worst-kept secret in sports. I don't think anybody really didn't think Mark did it, but to hear him come out and say that he did it, but then with a caveat, with an exception, that's where I just didn't think it was the best route to take.
And I think we're talking to John Maroon of Maroon PR. I think now that will lengthen the shelf life, but also, John and Bill, I think what he must have seen with A-Rod and Manny Ramirez was, hey, there is a shelf life. You know, it's a couple of months where it's still going to be part of your bio, but it's not like the first thing that's mentioned. What do you think the shelf life is for Mark McGwire as far as this controversy?
Well, I think the shelf life, it varies in intensity. I mean, it's going to be intense when his first couple of days in spring training, all the cameras are going to be there. He's going to have to speak to it. He's going to answer the questions. Then it'll dissipate. But will it always be a part of Mark's bio? I think it will be. When the Hall of Fame voting comes up every year, should it be a part of his bio? Should it be a part of discussion? It has to be. And so it's always going to be there. It's a matter of intensity. And the intensity will dissipate. He's going to have to do what he's done, what he did today and yesterday. He's going to have to do that again in spring training. He's going to have to do it a few more times, and he should get used to it. My advice to him, again, not to sound like a broken record, but it would be to, you know, let go of the whole, this didn't help my numbers, and I did it strictly to recover from an injury, because he looked pretty healthy in 98.
Yeah, beyond healthy, monstrous, superhuman, if you will. John, always good having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John. You guys. Have a great night.
Take care. John Maroon, again, he does a lot of does PR, again, for a lot of athletes, including Cal Ripken, Carmelo Anthony. He's worked with the Redskins, although he didn't stay there. I guess Dan Snyder wasn't taking his comments too well.
Oh, no. Hey, you know what we left out with the McGwire thing?
What's that?
He picked an interviewer who he's like a foot taller than.
But they were sitting down. What is he towering over Bob Costas?
I think Bob held back a little. He's intimidated. He's interviewing this giant.
You know what? I think too, though, the fact that he went to Costas also said, "Hey, look, I'm going to a guy who's not going to be taking it easy." I know that came up, and I'm going to address that in the next hour. Where we had Mike Paul, who's the reputation doctor, who said, "You know, go to MLB Network. They have a vested interest, Major League Baseball." I think it's the kind of the opposite with fans who think, no, Costas isn't going to let you off the hook, just like he talked to Bob Lee today. It's not like he's looking for softballs, and I think that was a decent way of doing it, you know, where you start off that way, don't you think?
They had the St. Louis connection, though. Bob Costas.
So you you think there's some sympathy? I don't think Bob
Really? Please, I think he totally held back.
Really?
Bob Lee today was a little different.
What you think? Oh, you think? What did Bob asked and then followed up politely and it wasn't very.
He was polite, but man, there was a couple times where it was just crying for the interviewer to go, really? Really? Like, have a couple of those, and he didn't hint at it.
Bill Simmons is still with us, finishing up our hour together, having a great time. Let me just throw out, I've been talking about Mark McGwire and wondering, hey, where are the clean players asking for blood testing? And without blood testing, you're still going to have the steroid era. And when I really thought all of that through, what I was talking about yesterday, I had a couple people emailing me on it, Bill, I had to think, you know what? Floyd Mayweather is asking for WADA-style testing, not anything above that, with Manny Pacquiao, and it's Pacquiao who said no. So you know what? I should have been more in the Mayweather camp in backing him up on his wishes. Go ahead. What are your thoughts?
I'm very upset with Pacquiao, who had moved into the Mount Rushmore for me for boxers in my lifetime, and I just love the guy. And, you know, I was willing to overlook the fact that he put on 40 pounds and has more punching power than he did at 108. But the fact that he doesn't want to get the blood testing, I mean, that the whole can't do it within a month of the fight, but then HBO has footage of him getting it 15 days before, and it reminds me of the McGwire thing. He, like, can't keep his story straight. Here's the thing, though. I don't think Floyd ever wanted this fight, and I think he's undefeated. He wants to stay undefeated. He knows that Pacquiao is just a machine and just somebody the likes of which he's never fought before. And if he did fight him, I think he's on his bicycle for 12 rounds. And you know, it'll be one of those dissatisfying decisions where everybody's just mad that Floyd never actually mixed it up. And don't you think that's what would have happened?
Yes, but it's the greatest defensive fighter of his generation against the greatest offensive fighter of his generation. I think Floyd would... I still favor Floyd. I think some of what you're saying is true. I think Floyd values that O on his record more than anything, and he wants to keep it clean. But you know what? He's just asking for better blood or better drug testing, which is what I keep advocating baseball players to do that they haven't done. So I have to say, like, I haven't been on his side. I see both sides, but now I see more Floyd's side. And I think if you want to see better, you know, clean baseball, don't you want to see clean boxing, which a juiced up guy is much more dangerous than just a baseball player, isn't it?
I blame both. I think it's very dubious that he doesn't want to do the test. And I think Mayweather never really had any full intention of getting into the ring with this guy. And this is the topic that he chose for the app.
Yeah, I kind of thought that too, Bill, but I've taken it back because when they negotiated with the mediator, he got to, all right, the last 14 days you won't be blood tested. Would you take that? And if Pacquiao had turned around and said, deal, that fight is on.
But he knew that he wasn't going to say that because obviously he's not hiding something or something's going on here. How can he not agree to that?
But, all right,
$40 million.
All right, but say he doesn't agree to it then, and then Floyd can say, hey, I got to fight. I don't want to fight a juiced up guy. Isn't he right then?
But you made my point. I don't think he ever wanted the fight, and I think this played out exactly how he wanted it to play out. And I don't totally blame him because he's got the zero, and for all we know, Pacquiao is juiced up. But I just wish I don't think he had to go through the whole charade of getting my hopes up and your hopes up that the best fight of the last 10 years was going to happen, and now it's not happening.
Yeah, no, the Super Bowl is canceled, basically.
Yes,
we are out of time, Bill. It's been great. Let's do it again. Answer our emails once in a while, will you?
Buy my book out there. Book of Basketball.
But by the way, it's tremendous. We'll do another hour on that. We got to run, Bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Brian Kenny Show here on ESPN Radio.